You know, I may actually have waited like more than 30 years to have this moment in my journalistic career. Jim Holt, what is the meaning of life?
Well, that's the conclusion of my book, but I don't want to give it away at the very beginning, do I?
Well, Jim Holt's latest book is Why Does the World Exist? What a heady question is that. Author Jim Holt sets out to play detective on a kind of existential journey. He spoke with mathematicians, monks, religious leaders, novelists, theologians, in hopes of finding an explanation for this puzzle of existence, the meaning of life. Why are we here? Why does the world exist? It's the title of his book, and he's going to share his exploration with us. Now, how did rumination about these issues in your own mind become an actual journey to talk with other people who have very profoundly ruminated on these questions?
Well, you know, this is always the question, why is there a universe at all? Why is there something rather than nothing? Has always struck me as the most awesome and sublime mystery of all. You know, the philosopher William James said, this is the darkest question in all of philosophy. And I was watching Martin Amis was being interviewed on the Bill Moyers show about 5 or 6 years ago. And Bill Moyers said, you know, why is there a universe? And Martin Amis said, well, I think we're about 5 Einsteins away from being able to answer that question. And I thought, 5 Einsteins, maybe some of those Einsteins are actually around now. And if I go and seek them out and sort of arrange their thoughts in the right order, I might be able to achieve some enlightenment. And that's what I set out to do.
Now, before we go on that journey, you're not the kind of guy who at age 11 or something was sitting around in your room going, nothingness, something, nothingness, something.
Actually, it happened when I was about 16, embarrassingly enough. I don't mean to make myself sound terribly precocious, but I was a high school student. I was raised in a religious family, and I was beginning to question the metaphysics of religion, the idea that the world exists because God made the world, and God exists because that's what God does. He's self-existent. And I thought, you know, this can't be all there is to the puzzle of existence. And so I went to the local college library, and I got a copy of a book by Martin Heidegger called the Introduction to Metaphysics.
Right.
And on the first page, he posed the question, why is there something rather than nothing at all? And the poetry of the question just bowled me over. And so I've been a little bit obsessed with that on and off ever since.
When you saw that Heidegger, did you say to yourself in your heart, ah, these are my people?
I didn't realize that at the time that Heidegger was a Nazi during the Second World War. So no, I didn't have that thought. But and I also was just dismayed that in the rest of the book he never shed any light at all on this question. Why is there something rather than nothing? Uh-huh. So it was pathetic, actually.
So formulate the question. It's almost hard for humans with consciousness to resist the sense that this world must be some kind of graduation from, non-existence, that we're rewarded for having consciousness. There's something intrinsically good about there being something here, when, in fact, you say there's no intrinsic reason for anything to exist.
I don't quite say that. But back to the question of consciousness, you're actually going to another deep mystery. We know that there is a universe. We know that there is something rather than nothing, but we don't really understand the nature of that something. Science tells us that the universe consists essentially of elementary particles bumping around in space-time. But when it comes to revealing, I might pretentiously call the intrinsic nature of the physical universe, science is really silent. As Bertrand Russell pointed out a long time ago, science can only tell us how things are related to one another. It can't tell us what the inner nature of the universe is. And that had led some physicists, like Sir Arthur Eddington, to speculate that the inner nature of the universe might be mind. We think of mind and consciousness as something that arose relatively late in the existence of the universe. Our neighborhood of the universe came into existence about 13.7 billion years ago in the Big Bang. And so, after a long, long history, finally consciousness emerged on a planet, Earth, and maybe elsewhere in the universe. That's the usual story. But there are some thinkers, both physicists and philosophers, who think that mind has been there all along, and that even electrons, protons, and neutrons have some sort of proto-mentality. Now, I don't really endorse it. That sounds a little bit daft to me. But the strange thing I discovered in my investigation of the question, why is there something rather than nothing, is that you have to consider a lot of ideas that sound crazy when you first encounter them. And I've heard the ideas that sound to me clinically insane from some of the greatest thinkers of our time. So it's instilled in me a little bit of intellectual humility that I'm less likely to dismiss an idea as crazy until I've really investigated it logically.
All right. So Higgs boson, crazy idea or something that reassures you that we're more on the something side rather than the nothing side?
Actually, the Higgs boson is, of course, the particle that corresponds to the Higgs field. And what does the Higgs field do? It makes the universe a little messier than it would otherwise be. The Higgs field breaks the symmetry between massless particles like the photon, which travel the speed of light, and massive particles that mediate what's called the weak nuclear force. So, you know, basically the important thing about the Higgs field and the Higgs boson is it makes reality messier than it would otherwise be. And it seems to me, you know, one of the implications at the end of my long investigation, I can sort of see a general reason for the universe's existence taking shape. And one of the implications of that reason is that reality should be infinitely mediocre, that it should be neither perfectly simple, that would be nothingness. Nothingness, after all, is the simplest possible reality. So it's clearly not nothingness, but it also falls infinitely short of utter fullness. So it's basically something in the middle between perfect nothingness and perfect fecundity, and it's a messy reality. And so
think of the universe not as some absolute this or that, but as more of a residue of a bunch of stuffs.
Well, that's certainly a way of putting it. But the implication is that some parts of the universe should look as though they have a purpose. Some parts should be very beautiful. Some should be very ugly. Some should be they're morally good, morally evil. It's a mixture of all of these things. This sounds like a pipe dream. Actually, I know I'm sounding like a mystic.
No.
Actually, this conclusion that the universe is sort of an infinitely mediocre place follows from some very interesting principles, scientific principles, and you know, that was really where this intellectual investigation took me. And this is not my own theory. This is actually an implication of a brilliant philosopher named Derek Parfit, who's at All Souls College at Oxford, and he was, you know, the next to last great thinker that I talked to. And suddenly I had, you know, a real moment of enlightenment, an epiphany. I thought, oh, I've been thinking about this question all wrong. Don't try to think of how nothingness can give rise to something. That's never going to happen. Think of it, you know, the reality had to turn out a certain way. And if we look at reality, we might be able to see a special feature that it has that gives us a clue to why it exists. And that's what Derek Parfit, the Oxford philosopher, taught me.
Well, there's so many of those conversations and encounters in this book, Why Does the World Exist? And on page 254, you quote from the Ivan Gonkharov's novel, Oblomov, who is told by his friend Stoltz, the purpose of life, the purpose of existence is to live. You know, at page 254, the purpose is to live, which I found incredibly reassuring, but also, you know, the puzzle still exists regardless of this investigation that you've undertaken here. Then on the very next page, you describe genetically the possibilities of humans who may have lived so far in human history. And because of the natural diversity of our genes, the likelihood of the 40 billion or so humans that have lived up until this point is such a tiny fraction of the possible humans that could exist. It makes us all feel like we're pretty lucky that we even made it here.
Yeah, we've won an amazing cosmic lottery. And suppose if your parents had arranged their sexual congress just on a slightly different schedule, you would not have come into existence. Another person, perhaps genetically similar to you, would have come into existence. And that raises, to me, you know, the headiest of all thoughts, that if I had not been born, and you know, it was an extremely lucky event that any of us came into existence when you consider all of the other possible humans. But if I hadn't come into existence, there would have been nothing rather than something.
Exactly. And did this even happen? Well, it's great to contemplate. Jim Holt, thanks so much.
No, thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.